So, perhaps a fitting subject for our last slightly civil war, since you and I are both dads, and one of us is hairy.
That's true.
And one of us is bald.
Do you feel particularly drawn to the hairy dad game? It's a quite a trend in AAA games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where it started, but you can throw in games like Last of Us, Last of Us 2, God of War, Bioshock Infinite. What else? There was The Evil Within 2 suddenly turned into a hairy dad game. After the first one was like just a cop on the edge sort of game.
Mm.
There's quite a few games about yummy hairy dads. Days Gone, maybe. There was no kids, but we were definitely a hairy husband.
You know, while not a game about a hairy dad, the Horizon Zero Dawn had quite the hairy dad complex.
Ah, yes. That's sort of post-hairy dad.
And to me, the my problem with the hairy dad game, I am a sucker for like father-son relationships as someone who has a questionable relationship with his own father and who is a dad. I am a sucker for that kind of story, like, you know, dads and kids, you know, hashing it out.
Well, this is the point, isn't it? One suspects these have become so popular in mainstream gaming because mainstream game developers are now old enough to be dads, and the general target audience of games have now grown to the age where they're generally dads. And so presumably these games are made to appeal to dads, and that leads me to my question. Do they?
Fuck no. The problem I have specifically with these games is the absolute that the horse thing wears, the blinders that this game has about their dad characters. The dad is always right all the time. The dad is, you know, only harsh to their children because it's a hard world, right?
Well, then generally they're depicted as wrong if they're not showing enough affection towards the surrogate child. The arc is always learning to accept their role as a hairy dad.
I would disagree. I think while that's a surface level thing, the both games, both Last of Us and God of War lean really hard on the I was only mean for your own good sense.
And so only our children understood that we are distant and grumpy in order to make the money so that they can have food on the table.
Exactly. And so it's like dad porn, but it's all wrong for me. It's all wrong.
It's almost like dad and mum porn, because the mums can enjoy the spectacle of a real man. A real man who does anything to protect his children and secretly is reluctant about being a dad, but secretly really wants to be one. And
right.
And will literally push themselves to the point of serious physical damage to protect their children. When, in practical terms, you probably want to be alive long enough to rescue your kids.
Right. Well, and it's like an antiquated, it's like a version of a dad.
Surprise, Duffy.
To me, it's a game about dads because game developers are dads, but it's also a game about them dealing with their own daddy issues because the dads are all like John Wayne analogs, you know, which are things that our dads would have been into.
Always very fit dads. Always very muscular dads.
Very muscular, like that kind of like distant, toxic, masculine kind of thing. And so it's like that is not where like the male ideal is anymore. And so it's a really antiquated version of the male ideal, which is it's just very, very strange to me. So, and I think their storytelling is very, very bad, very poorly paced.
Yeah, there's still that fetishistic vibe to it, I get. It's like when you look at romance novels for women, like housewives, and it's always like incredibly buff dudes on the covers with flowing Fabio hair.
Yeah,
it's that sort of fantasy.
My wife is really into Outlander. I don't know if you know of Outlander.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, I bet your wife knows about it. Oh boy, it is popular with the ladies. And the male lead in that. Yes, one like super buff, super handsome, but also like super sensitive. It's about time travel. It's weird. Toffee! Surprise, Toffee!
Well, it's less of a surprise this time.
That's true. But in any case, the point is that the dads in the story seem to be existing simultaneously in two different realms, both being like an avatar for us, but also an avatar for our frustrations with our own father, which I don't, you know, and like you can see that in the narrative, like in the plot points of like just The Last of Us, right? Where Joel is not an attentive father. He's very dismissive of the kid. Then he learns to love Ellie, but still at the end is still making decisions for Ellie because dad knows best. And so it's like,
well, that's the point. He is now dad and dad knows best.
Right. And that's not the point it should be, I guess, is what I'm saying. Which is why, like, while I had a lot of issues with God of War PS4, I think that they told a more complete story. One, Atreus actually grows with Kratos.
I did get that sense. They certainly go through a bit of a roller coaster.
Yes.
Those boys.
And by the end of the story of God of War PS4, like they actually sit down and have a conversation and say, hey, maybe we should stop this cycle of toxic masculinity. And Kratos says, okay.
Yes. The big theme in that game of Kratos is his own issues with his own dad is quite a prominent part of things there.
Yeah.
But you were saying before we recorded that in your research, you noticed an alarming degree of similarity between the paths of Joel and Kratos.
This was a really tough one for me, Yahtzee, because I was like, oh, I just started mentally going through plot points in both games, in both The Last of Us and God of War PS4. And I was like, okay.
Because you said that, but I'm not entirely convinced that they had very similar paths.
All right. So here's my bullet points that can be applied to both stories equally.
Okay.
A father's second chance at a family. But they are a reluctant slash distant father. They're only... You know, oh, go ahead.
I completely forgot Kratos had a family in the earlier games and he killed them all.
Exactly. That was a big deal in the first game.
That's funny how that never seems to get brought up much in God of War 4.
Like,
you used to have a wife and child and you murdered them. You'd think there'd be some misgivings on the part of any future family he had.
I think that's an undertone in God of War PS4. I think that's kind of always bubbling, or at least, or maybe I put that there, but to me that was always bubbling near the surface. Okay, so they're a reluctant, distant father. They're only harsh to their children to help them deal with the cruel world. There is an emphasis on keeping the kids away from combat, only to reluctantly teach them, only to have the kids then help in combat.
Yeah. Sense I got from Kratos was that he just couldn't be asked. Not so much that he was trying to protect the kid.
Well, remember, you know, for Kratos, his issue was he was worried that Atreus was going to take after his worst traits.
Okay.
Which is the exact same thing Joel was worried about with Ellie.
quite reasonably, it turns out.
Yes.
Don't you worry, Joel. You only killed a couple of innocent people.
Right. In both stories, the child turns out to be the special.
Yes. Yeah, well, arguably. I mean, Ellie is special because she's got an immunity from the zombie virus.
Yeah.
And Atreus, he's just special because he's a god, right?
Right. But they are both the special. They are both special. And more importantly, the child is lied to about their specialness in both scenarios, right? The child...
They couldn't be trusted with that information. They weren't mature enough to understand.
Exactly. Both children tell jokes while their father grunts back.
Well, you know, that's just, you know, nature abhors a vacuum.
If
one character is grunty and quiet and grumpy, that's just the natural counterpoint, I suppose.
While you are correct, all I'm doing is pointing out similarities. Let's see here. Both feature a father-only section to save the kid. In both stories, the child ends up mirroring the worst/most aggressive traits of the father. The father eventually comes clean about the kid's specialness/their past. They're very, very incredibly similar. And yes, you might just consider that to be like the tropes of the genre, but we're also talking about two PS4 exclusive narrative focused games. So it's like,
right.
They are remarkably, disappointingly similar when you put them under a microscope, I feel.
Well, on the subject of these just being tropes, let's weigh that up against other hairy dad games like Bioshock Infinite. Did you ever play Bioshock Infinite?
I have never played Bioshock Infinite, so go ahead.
Well, you're a hairy dad who is reluctantly brought together with a girl, a surrogate girl, who's, you know, bright and cheerful and jokey in all the ways the main character is not. They are indeed the special one.
Is this his second chance at a family?
Did he
have... Ooh,
yes,
fuck.
Yes.
In fact, no.
I'm not sure I want to spoil too much. Shall we just say spoilers generally?
Yeah, spoilers generally for Bioshock Infinite coming up.
Okay. It turns out, this is like the twist towards the end, it's the same family. He lost his daughter many, many years ago and went into a decline. And he eventually discovers that the little girl he's been like escorting throughout the game is none other than his daughter.
Oh, fuck that. is he harsh to the child figure only to help them deal with the cruel world?
Yeah. It's because, you know, that's just a standard video game setting, isn't it? It's got to be cruel. There's lots of things to kill in it.
Sure.
But yeah, she starts out being naive and upset at the main character for his grumpy ways. But eventually she's forced to come around and realize that he's right about the harshness of the world and all that.
Oh, daddy knows best. That's right. Daddy's right all the time. Is there an emphasis on keeping her away from combat, only to reluctantly teach her, only to have her help in combat?
Yes.
Fuck you.
She starts helping in combat throughout the course of the game by like throwing you supplies and stuff.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. This is ticking a lot of these boxes. You also said she's jokey while the father's grumpy. Is she lied to about her specialness?
I think she knows from the start how special she is. She has like a special power to like open portals and stuff.
Okay.
But she is lied to. She's lied to because the main character says he's going to take her to Paris when actually he's just going to like take her to his employer and like drop her off.
All right. That's, you know, we'll give that like a half point.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Is there a hairy dad only section that is specifically tailored to save the child figure?
Well, yeah, it's the whole start of the game. You're by yourself for a while and then you find her and then you escort her for the rest of the game.
That's another half point, maybe.
Well, there is a bit later on when she runs away and you have to like you're alone again and you have to get her back.
Okay, well, yeah, then that's a full point. That's a full point. And then let's see here. Does the child end up mirroring the worst/most aggressive traits of the father?
Yes, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, that's a big theme in both The Last of Us and God of War.
It's complicated. She becomes jaded. Like,
okay.
She discovers like the lie, and she like becomes starts to realize more about, you know, her history, and
sure.
She becomes a little more, jaded. There's a bit where you, because of all the dimension hopping, time hopping bullshit in that game, there's a bit where you like see her future self, and she's become very jaded.
Oh, okay. Well, that counts. That's a full point. Right. And then does the father eventually come clean about the kid's specialness slash their past?
Well, as we say, the specialness wasn't a lie, and but he does eventually come clean about the lie he did tell her.
Mm.
And there's complicated character conflict.
Sure.
And the twist that she is his daughter, who he lost as a baby, is totally unknown to him, obviously.
Right.
He discovers it along with her.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that checks a lot of these trope marks.
There you go. And my other example was The Evil Within 2.
Okay.
Because the character in the first Evil Within was just like a sort of Dirty Harry cop type.
Okay.
And in the next game, suddenly he looks exactly like Joel from The Last of Us. Like, they took away his, like, suit and waistcoat and, like, sharp suit.
Yeah.
And trench coat. And now he's just wearing, like,
a jeans
and a green button-down shirt.
Damn it.
And he's got a beard.
Oh, damn it.
But a lot of the other stuff doesn't apply because he doesn't actually escort his child. He's just on a quest to rescue his child.
That's a different thing.
They only get reunited at the end.
Mm.
But he does tick a lot of the boxes for the character of the yummy hairy dad.
Yeah, and I guess with like the specific, you know, hairy dad trope that we're working with here, it has to be a game or a narrative in which it's a dad and child together for most of it, I would think.
Well, you don't have so many examples of that, but there is a sort of... We were talking about Horizon Zero Dawn as post-Hairy Dad.
Yeah.
And I think we were out of Hairy Dad and we're into post-Hairy Dad because there's a number of examples of that sort of game where the focus is on a character that seems like they would have been the offspring of the Hairy Dad.
Sure.
Horizon Zero Dawn is a good example. One good example is, what was it called? A Plague Tale: Innocence.
Okay.
Where you play a girl in like plague-stricken medieval France.
Mm-hmm.
And you get your hairy dad get killed early on, and then you, the teenage girl, have to escort a much smaller child throughout the course of the game.
okay, but
so
it's the
hairy dad pay forward. You see,
do you have the standard hairy? Like, is it a reskin of the hairy dad? Like, is she grumpy? Is she reluctant?
She's, I guess she's still feeling. She's still kind of. Naive to the world.
Okay.
A lot of it.
Okay.
She's sort of flustered. Saying, oh my God, I have to like navigate my little brother through this hideous nightmare.
Right. Okay. Not necessarily the same. I think like, to me, this is cementing more like the stark similarities between The Last of Us and God of War PS4. You know, I feel like they both tick so many of these boxes. And I know, like, The Last of Us Part 2 tried to move away from Joel.
That's another post-Hairy Dad game in the spirit of what I'm talking about.
But is it, like...
Well, it's quite literally post-Hairy Dad in that the Hairy Dad's killed early on. When I say post-Hairy Dad, I mean, it is, like, after the Hairy Dad, but it still has, like... It's still like mired in the spirit of Hairy Dad because he's still such a looming presence over the plot.
That's why I ask if it is truly post-Hairy Dad. Like Aloy is her own unique character in contrast to Rust? Rost.
I really have forgotten a lot about Horizon Zero Dawn. What's the plot arc of Aloy in that game?
It's literally her discovering her past, where she came from. Remember, she was birthed from the mountain?
Right. Yeah.
And so she has to travel. Do you want like all the spoilers or?
Well, maybe. So was she like, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. So there was like this secret bunker.
There was a secret bunker, and all of a sudden a baby came out of it, and so she has to travel the lands to discover the secret, not only of this ancient technology, but of her birth. And as it turns out, are you ready for spoilers for Horizon Zero Dawn?
Yes, please.
She is a clone of the woman who like helped invent some of the safe some of the safety keeps as the machines were taking over the world.
That's not very good as a twist goes. I mean, so you're a clone of someone who did a bad thing. Who the fuck cares?
No. The girl didn't. The original girl didn't do a bad thing. The original girl was trying to stop the bad thing, realized she couldn't, and so tried to shove as much of humanity underground as possible.
Yeah, I remember that.
And
but the fact that the Aloy is a clone of her isn't really important. I mean, that character isn't really. Doesn't really have any presence besides that.
She needed to be a clone of the original scientist so that Aloy could have access to certain tools to stop the evil machines because it was only DNA recognition things.
Well, who the fuck would design the system that way?
Right.
Surely,
it was like,
surely you'd want anyone to get the equipment to defeat the evil machines.
Well, it's complicated because the evil machines became sentient, and then if they had the equipment, they could also like make themselves more powerful. It was a whole big thing. I thought it worked great.
Well, I admit I never finished that game.
Oh, okay. I did, and I loved it. But that's true post-Hairy Dad, where the Hairy Dad is there and gruff and distant and trying to, you know, prepare Aloy for a cruel world. But the story is Aloy's, whereas The Last of Us Part 2, even though we are following Ellie, Ellie is literally, like, wrapped herself in Joel. The entire mission is all about Joel all the time.
There's post Hairy Dad and there's post Hairy Dad.
There's pretender post Hairy Dad.
Okay.
You know, sure. No. This is Ellie's story. Ellie's the star here. Ellie's the star here. But she's doing everything on Joel's behalf. That's faking it.
I'm just going over some examples of major AAA games in the last couple of years. And there really doesn't seem to be sort of any kind of trend akin to Hairy Dad. It's all been quite a mix since the heyday of Hairy Dad.
How do we consider Nathan Drake in here? As Hairy Dad is concerned,
I would group him with who did we bring up earlier? The dude from Days Gone in the subtrope of Hairy Husband.
Sure.
So not quite to the point of being Hairy Dad, but having to go through a similar arc of learning responsibility as a husband rather than a dad.
Ooh, pre-Hairy Dad or quasi-Hairy Dad? Okay.
Oh, Christ. Well, yeah, Hairy Husband, there you go.
I guess
must put aside the boyish thing trappings of adventure and settle down.
Fuck, man. Like, you like no simpler metaphor for these game developers as they get older. It's like I understand write what you know, but come on, we still want to go on an adventure.
Yeah. And then in like Uncharted games, it turns out our wife quite likes having adventures as well, which is very convenient.
Right. Yeah. You get to do all the boyish things you want.
That is something they could have talked about. Let's keep going on adventures, but go on adventures together. But no, it's always the wife being, no, you got to settle down and get a mortgage.
Like, how incredibly sexist is that? still today.
Did you ever play Catherine?
Catherine,
It's like a Japanese game by the people who make Persona.
No.
But the theme in that game is very overtly, men must either grow up or live forever in their boyish fantasies. They must, and the point when they grow up is when they get married to a proper lady and settle down.
Right.
In that game, there's like two like love interests that your character split between. There's Catherine with a C and Catherine with a K.
Uh-huh.
Catherine with a C is sexy and fun and dangerous and literally a demon from hell. And Catherine with a K is a frumpy, you know, straight lady who demands that he stop wanting excitement and fun in his life and take some responsibility.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's very on the nose, that one. Okay. Basically, being a husband means not ever having sex again.
Right.
No more sexiness in the life of a husband.
No more fun or sex or adventures.
No. Now you're going to get a job laying bricks and start fathering our whelp of offspring through this hole in a sheet.
You know who got this right years ago? Weird Al Yankovic. Do you remember the movie UHF? Have you ever seen the Weird Al Yankovic movie UHF?
I have never seen UHF.
For those who have, a very similar story, very similar, like, you know, man-child, you know, he's aloof, he goes from job to job, he's a dreamer, he's not a provider, which causes friction between him and his girlfriend. He then gets a job at a UHF station, a cable access television station, you know, that airs very strange things, and finds success in his weird adventurous ideas. But still has to learn responsibility to run the station. And at the end, he gets back together with his girl, not because he learned responsibility, but because he learned a proper balance. And his girlfriend said, "I never wanted you to stop dreaming. I just wanted to be part of the dream, baby." And they dream off together. Oh, so nice.
Sounds like a very sarcastic film.
It's very good. It's a very good film.
Well, if you say so.
I think it is. It's probably strange to watch nowadays because a lot of the references are dated, but anyone our relative age will understand all the references. It's very good. Very good movie.
Well, as I say, I've been looking at like a digest of games from recent years, looking for a similar trend along the lines of A Hairy Dad.
Okay.
But you know what I think the trend might be is more towards blank slates as characters. I mean, okay. If the character isn't a flat out, you know, just a character you can define yourself by citing their appearance and name and stuff, they're usually just sort of there.
Okay, give me a blank slate character.
Well, Assassin's Creed Valhalla, you decide if your main character is male or female, and then they just sort of, they're like water, they just take the shape of whatever vessel they're put in for the course of the plot. As is the case with a lot of Assassin's Creed protagonists, I think.
Okay.
Then you've got the popularity of games like Dark Souls, where it's just an RPG with could be anyone in there.
Right, you create your own character.
Serious example, Watch Dogs Legion. Perfect example of blank slatedness for the main character.
Oh, okay. Sure,
sure. Because you can be literally anyone in that game. Immortals Fenyx Rising, you could play male or female, and the character's just sort of a blank slate again in that. Cyberpunk 2077, you play a blank slate.
So in my head, where this is leading is, which do you prefer, a character or a blank slate? And that's a tough question because I like having choices. I like being able to, you know, move around like water as a character, but I also do like a well-defined character. And I think
me too. I guess it depends on what the game's going for. As a narrative specialist, if the game is narrative focused, the character needs to be interesting.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter so much if the game's more gameplay focused. Like a Dark Souls. Oh, here we go. Ghost of Tsushima.
Oh, sure.
A decent game. How would you, I wouldn't say that represents any sort of trend other than just, you know, it's another AAA Assassin's Creed-like game. But what would you say? Would you say the main character represents any particular trope there?
Ooh, not as far as Hairy Dad is concerned.
Definitely not. No.
Though the main thrust of your character arc in Ghost of Tsushima is whether or not you abide by your father's rules, whether you make your own way. Right?
Well, I guess you could sort of classify that alongside the learning responsibility husband, but sort of in reverse. Where we start off as the responsible husband and need to learn the benefits of flexibility.
Right. But I think that is a really good example you know, one, because I really enjoyed the game, but I think that is a good example of having a well-defined character in a game where you, the player, still has some options.
Oh, hello, Cookie. How are you?
Oh, Cookie! Hold on. Oh, we get a toffee, so we get a cookie.
Hi, Cooks. How's it going? Oh, so many scratches.
Hi, Cookie. Here's toffee.
Good girl, dogs. But, you know, like that, your Horizon Zero Dawns, your, like, I don't want to count the Spider-Man games. I think they do the characters very well.
Ooh, Doom Eternal. There's a good example of a blank slate character.
Ooh, there you go. Very blank slate.
Yeah. Maybe it's because COVID's fucked everything up, but there's, you really have to reach to look for a trend in recent AAA games.
I'm okay with that.
Well, there hasn't been that many, you know, big AAA games.
Sure. But
As I say, the ones that aren't black slates don't really have much in the way of narrative to speak of.
Oh,
what's wrong with her now?
Someone opened the door, and she's like, "Whoa, someone's attacking the house because someone opened the door." Yeah, it's fine, Cooks.
All right, a couple of examples from a couple of years back.
All
Death
right,
Stranding.
Oh.
Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Oh, pudding. Mush pudding. Gotcha.
Right.
Mush.
Control. Yeah, that's all over the map.
Yeah.
In terms of themes.
You know, this is very much an aside, but the other day, like a week and a half ago, I re-downloaded the Star Wars Fallen Order.
Yes, the Souls-like Star Wars.
The Souls-like Star Wars. You know, thinking to myself, oh, yeah, maybe I was too harsh on the game. And, like, I spent all this time re-downloading it. Like, I needed to actually re-download Origin, which I bought it on, which is, you know, an awful way to play a game.
Certainly is. I just realized I should have said recursive, not Souls-like.
Yahtzee, you're breaking our own rules here.
Although some pedants in the comments saying we should, for the meaning we intended, we should have said iterative rather than recursive.
Ooh.
But that's not a sexy word.
Iterative, no.
Iterative.
But I read.
Seriously, I think the word you're looking for is iterative. That's what you sound like. That's you, commenters.
This is grammar police. Me. I re-downloaded Origin, found all my login information, and re-downloaded it only to realize I had no inkling to play it whatsoever, and I'm really glad I didn't. I think I would have had a bad time because I had a bad time playing it the first time.
I think it's a harmless enough recursive time killer.
I think the gameplay, like the gameplay, the recursive elements are really good. I could not stand the story. I couldn't stand Cal as a character.
Fair enough. Did he have a character?
Well, that's why I couldn't stand it.
I remember commenting on my review. Up until a certain point, the theme of Star Wars was always, you know, light side versus dark side.
Right.
Don't be tempted and all that. But it feels like that theme was completely absent from Fallen Order.
Yeah.
And perhaps from Star Wars generally in recent years.
Yeah.
Everything's a much more wibbly-wobbly these days.
Well, because they realize a universal truth, which is Jedi are boring.
I suppose.
By their very design, Jedi are the most boring characters, which is why Luke doesn't really become a Jedi until the very end of the third movie.
Lawful good, lawful good, lawful good, lawful good.
There's nothing much interesting in that. Luke only becomes a Jedi when he chooses not to fight. And guess what? You can't have a game where you just keep choosing not to fight. Or I guess you could. It's called Undertale.
There you go. It's not really the same thing, though.
Oh, shit. By the way, that's a great clickbait article. Undertale is the best Jedi game ever made.
Get on it.
Get on it.
Of the Escapist.
Hold on. I have to write that down. Because that is a...
Jedi is just really just expressing older themes of, you know, dualism.
Oh, no, it's
Undertale,
all...
Undertale, like, just harks back to that, really.
It's all really tropes, but the core of a Jedi's mentality is only to fight as a way of defense. You only fight in defense. You never attack. That is.
Well, I guess no one explained that to the dude from Jedi Fallen Order.
Cal Kestis, you mean?
Cal Kestis. Cal Kestis, who they made up because they didn't want to have to pay for whoever made up Kyle Katarn.
But I think we have a glut of games that have really interesting characters and tell really good stories. And we're talking a lot about PS4 titles because they're the only ones that make single player experiences anymore. Mm. But like, you know, Aloy, I'm going to forget his name from Ghost of Tsushima.
Jin Sakai.
Ooh, Jin Sakai, Peter Parker, Miles Morales, even Kratos, I will put in there as having a good story. Let me look at my wall of games here. And that's about it.
I suppose the fact that there's less of a gear and trend like there was with Hairy Dad games reflects growing maturity in video games as a narrative artistic medium.
Right.
We can explore all kinds of experiences these days.
And we can tell a story without shoehorning you into weird and narratively dissonant experiences. I'm looking at you, The Last of Us and The Last of Us Part 2. You know, we can weave the narrative into the characterization and still engage the player. That is a possible thing that the Last of Us doesn't do.
Yeah. I mean, let's not forget the old thing I said in my Last of Us 2 review, where making a character morally complex or beating them up a lot doesn't make them interesting.
Ooh, so, so true. So, so true.
The Tomb Raider reboots come across as a little bit post-Hairy Dad. Because that's like Lara's main motivation through the games, isn't it?
Ooh, that's right.
Like the legacy of her unseen, presumably hairy dad.
That's like all the reboot is her. It, you know what? All the reboot is what The Last of Us Part 2 did, which is sure the daughter's the main character, but they are still working off of the whims of their father.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to call you out.
They feel like they need to play up the physical trauma these characters undergo to show that they can be just as tough as the boys.
Yeah, I think they overdid it a little bit.
Just a touch.
Just a tad. It turns into torture porn incredibly fast. And then,
you know, it's funny to compare the Tomb Raider reboots and the violence the main character is subjected to in those games, and compare it to the violence the main character is subjected to in a thematically very similar game, Uncharted, in which it's played more as the same way, the same knockabout fun with which Indiana Jones took a punch.
Right. Indiana Jones never got tortured.
Because we're all boys here. We're all having boys' fun. When girls get involved and get hit, suddenly all the fun has to stop. In case they run back to mum and cry.
Ooh, Yahtzee, you're pointing out the inherent sexism in game design. Burr, burr, burr.
Yeah, these so-called woke developers making games about female protagonists and then kicking the shit out of them from start to finish. We will have true equality when a lady can take a punch in a game and it's played for laughs.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Get on it, developers.
Yeah, no, I think that's an incredibly, one, it's incredibly woke. Two, that's an incredibly good point, pointing out the duality. We see a lot of that in The Last of Us Part 2 with both our main female characters getting absolutely tortured.
Yeah.
Needlessly. Isn't that
something one of the developers even say as much when they were making one of the Tomb Raider reboots? They were saying, yes, we're designing this game so that you want to feel that you feel sorry for Lara and feel you have to protect her.
Yes.
Can we just play as a badass and do badass things like we did in the previous Tomb Raider games? I was sort of enjoying that dynamic.
Right? or like, you know, be a badass and do a badass thing like in a million other games that have female protagonists, you know, like a Bayonetta. She's a badass. She gets her ass kicked. You still have fun.
Yeah, the weird anomaly here is fighting games, one-on-one fighting games, where they kick the absolute shit out of each other, regardless of gender or background or anything.
You know, fighting games are true feminist utopia.
You know, I've got a fun fact on this topic.
I'm ready.
I think, I forget what franchise it was, but there was a major fighting franchise that was looking into having Kazuma Kiryu from the Yakuza series as like a guest character.
Okay.
And I think the Yakuza like controllers put the kibosh on it because they, because Kazuma Kiryu would never hit a lady. And those games are full of ladies. Full of usually quite scantily clad ladies.
See, that's not equality right there. That's not equality.
I guess it's an old-fashioned view of gentlemanly conduct.
Yes. And that's not where we are.
I guess not, but it's sort of adorable in its way.
I get, like, on... You know, on a relative scale of sexism, sure, it's pretty low down there.
Yeah.
But it all leads to the same idea of thinking that women are less than, right? Oh, they're more fragile. Oh, we have to protect them. Like, it's all on the same scale of thinking that women are less than men. Mm. I feel, as someone who is incredibly woke... Well, I feel like I have to say that.
I mean, how can we be misogynists? We are married to ladies.
That's right.
Who apparently don't consider us misogynist scum. So think about that.
Checkmate, feminists.
A whole one woman, at least, disagrees with you.
My mom doesn't think I'm sexist.
Also, I have a daughter.
Oh, boom! So you got two at least.
I'm not sexist on two sides there.
I'll tell you though, like, you know, we had two boys, so I'm definitely sexist. Well, I did that on purpose.
You've got sexist sperm.
Damn it! I tried my best to keep the patriarchy down, and it's just too powerful.
It's the thing you're supposed to do to ensure a boy, like have sex while facing north.
There is actual research into this. They have found, or there is a correlation between men who bicycle a lot and the birth rate of them having girls. And so
they don't bicycle much at all.
Well, and so there is a theory out there. I can't imagine this has been tested. There is a theory that the sperm that carry men have the Y chromosome and women are XX, right? Is that how it goes?
Yeah, women are XX and men are XY.
And so the theory is that the XY chromosome carrying sperm are weaker than the XX sperm and therefore get injured easier. And so if you bicycle a lot or do certain activities that, you know, have a lot of movement down there, you're actually like kneecapping all of the male sperm.
Well, I do jerk off a lot.
But
anyway, I think we might be wrapping up this podcast.
I think once we get into sperm talk, we are clear to wrap up the podcast.
Okay, then. Well, as we said in the previous video, Slightly Civil War is being, what's the word, sunsetted?
I think that's what Nick called it. I want to say...
But the podcast will be continuing. We're just going to talk about whatever we want. Personally, I'd like to talk more about specific games. That's just my preference.
Yeah, and
like
when we talk about
general topics too much, you feel like you're treading old ground a lot.
Absolutely. So we can do that, and we'll be back possibly next week. I have no idea when we're coming back. Maybe the week after. Who knows?
I think it'll be the week after this goes out.
Oh, okay. Well, I know
we'll be,
for sure.
We'll be doing it, and we'll be doing it live, of course.
Oh, that's
live
right.
Live streaming the podcast.
Is that what we decided on?
Yes. Just don't. Oh. don't let them see too much of how the sausage is made.
We're making it up as we go along. Okay, great. Yes, we'll be back. We'll be live. Bye. Follow us on Twitter. Right. We have a normal exit that I should continue to do, which is that if you enjoyed listening to this, you can listen to the slightly civil war that this podcast was based off of, which is who's the better hairy dad, Joel or Kratos. You can watch that over on escapistmagazine.com, where you can also become an Escapist Plus member. You give us money every month so we can keep making weird stuff. It's a lot of fun. You can also become a YouTube member, and then you get a special emote when we live stream over on YouTube, and it's another way to support us and not the algorithm. You can also follow us both on Twitter. I'm at Harlack.
And I'm at Yahtzee Croshaw. Follow the Escapist generally on at Escapist Magazine to learn about all the updates.
That's right. That's where you can find out when we're going to live stream the podcast, because clearly I don't know when.
We'll figure it out.
We'll tweet it. We tweet everything. And that's all the things.
All right. Bye. Say goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Toffee.
He's asleep. He can't hear you.
Oh, go to sleep and dream of cats.
Oh, you woke him up.
Oh, no! Bye!